Well, we've got a box full of grizzled old cricketers. They're hard men of the game. It's very hard to get them to be polite and deferential. But just a moment ago, they all stood as one to attention when a true legend of Australian sport came into our box. It's a great pleasure to be able to welcome her to Macquarie Radio Cricket, although cricket is not her game. She's seven-time Grand Slam singles champion, Yvonne Gundogan-Crawley. Yvonne, it's great to have you with us. What are you doing at the cricket up here at the Gabba?
Well, I was invited here by Carl Rackerman here. You know, he's a good friend of mine. We've done a few fundraisers together, and it's great to be here. It's finally really good to be able to watch it live rather than watching it on TV all the time. But I have been following the tests, you know, for quite a few years now, and I love it.
You and Cipelli obviously go back a big, a long way.
You weren't including me and the non-gentleman there earlier on, Tim, were you? Place in Hilton Head.
Hilton Head Island, yeah, South Carolina, yeah.
Had to interview Yvonne for a program. I think it was called Australian Sports Heroes, and we had a couple of days there. Yvonne took me out to a nightclub.
Yep.
And I've still got it somewhere at home, the little rock concert that you bought me.
Oh, that's right.
Remember
yes.
that?
Yeah, yes, I do.
Yeah.
Oh, wonderful days. I really miss Hilton Head, actually.
Yeah, I bet you do,
and
yeah.
When I've been living in America for about 20 years, I think. Mm. But Hilton Head was the one place that I really do miss.
Right on the beach. It was a beautiful spot, wasn't it?
Great fishing. Yeah. No, it's wonderful. And then my children, Kelly and Morgan, were born in Beaufort, South Carolina. Yeah, we had to go to Beaufort. And now they've got their own kids. And Morgan just got married last night, so... But I couldn't miss out on today, so I'm glad to be here.
So you're a fisher person?
Oh, I love to fish, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yep, love to fish. But actually, I've been spending most of my time these days since coming back from America in, 91? And I said to my husband, Roger, I said I wanted to do something that to help Indigenous kids, to try and keep them in school. So he set up this whole program of doing come and try days, state camps, national camps, and giving out scholarships to different schools, quality education, all around Australia. And so we've been doing that now for nearly 20 years, actually. Mm. And 13 years of working with the governments. We've worked with three different governments who've supported us. And fortunately, we've been supported once again by the federal government. And... because it's working. We're actually keeping the kids in schools. It's an incentive-based program to get from one stage to the next to keep them in schools. And nearly 100% of the kids are staying in school, which is fantastic.
Terrific. And it's given your life a lot of meaning post your tennis career.
Well, I wouldn't be here unless I had that initial support of the townspeople of Borellan. I mean, you know, we were part of a big family and, you know, we couldn't afford to... buy a racket or, you know, go and play tournaments. And it was the townspeople that bought my suitcase, my clothes, everything to go to Sydney. So a big thank you to them. And so what they did for me, I'm trying to do for a lot of Indigenous kids around Australia and loving every minute of it.
Yvonne, you talked about growing up and the town helping you start your tennis career.
But
I'm told before you launched into tennis, you played a lot of cricket.
I did. I actually was a real tomboy at school, and I used to play cricket with the boys, and one of the Borellanites said to me the other day, he said, we're never able to get you out. But I did, for example, Ash Barty's now playing cricket, and I think she'd be very good at it because, you know, it's pretty well the same theory is that, you know, great hand-eye coordination, timing, and she could read the speed and everything. I think she'd do fantastically well. In fact, I ran into Steve Waugh at the Australian Hall of Fame Awards, and Ash, if you're listening to this, he sends you the very best of luck. He's sure that you're going to do very well at it, so there.
Yeah. Have you pondered what sort of tennis player you would be if your career had come all these years later? Because the game has changed so much, hasn't it? As has the game of cricket, for that matter. And there's a very interesting piece in The Australian today written by Gideon Haig about style and elegance and these players who play their sports with real ease, like Usman Khawaja, as we saw on the first and second days here. Now, you were very much that kind of tennis player, and yet it's now become a power driven game, hasn't it, among the women just as much as the men?
Well, I think it's got a lot to do with the technology of the equipment. I mean, we used to use the smaller face rackets, and because it was small and you were able to, you had to use the whole court, so there was a variety of pace and shots. And I guess that's why I enjoyed tennis so much, because there were just so many different skills out there to use. And that's why I love watching Federer today. I mean, one hand, every time he hits a backhand, he turns his shoulder and rolls over it. I said, oh, that must have felt good. No, he's kind of my hero.
Can he find a way of winning another slam, do you think?
I hope so. I keep hoping for it. I think just recently he started, playing really, really well. And I think he's still capable of it, actually.
Here's Neesham bowling to Burns, who on drive straight to mid on. None for 99.
As part of that program that I was talking about, Australian Sports Heroes, I interviewed Vic Edwards about Yvonne. And it was really interesting. I said, what was it you first saw in Yvonne that made you think she had a chance? And he said, her athleticism. He said, if I can find someone who is an athlete, I can teach them to play tennis.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Well, as I'm travelling around, I mean, I pretty well say the same thing when I see, young players. I say, the footwork's great, and you can build on that.
Yeah.
And Ash Barty, I mean, she was a great athlete. And I'm sure she'll be the same, with cricket also. But you're right, that's the first thing we noticed that could make them, become really good tennis players is the footwork.
Yeah.
And the athleticism, as you said.
Yeah. And how's that wall? Is that still standing at Burrellin?
It sure is.
Yeah?
Sure is. Yeah.
Too dense in it?
There's a sign on the top of it now saying Yvonne's wall. And it's got a flash line across it now cement down the bottom, whereas before it was just dirt. And then I used to play a little tournament against the wall. See how many times I could hit the ball against the wall, one bounce without making a mistake, write the highest score in the dirt, come back the next day and try and beat that score.
Right.
So that's how I got better, actually.
Yeah. And what sort of a line did you draw on the wall? Just your own line, did you? A bit wiggly?
No, I just aimed. I aimed for I had a little circle, and I just aimed for that circle every time.
It's interesting you saying you were aiming for a little circle marked on the wall. I remember talking to John Newcomb once, and he told me how he could blindfold himself. And he could, because of his ball release and everything, he knew where it was going to be, and he could serve and serve pretty accurately blindfolded because of a consistent ball toss.
Well, he's very talented, isn't he?
Yeah.
In his own brain.
Except when he played mixed doubles with you.
He told me that story.
Apparently he lost very early at Wimbledon 1 year, and he was obviously disappointed at losing, so he went out and drowned his sorrows a bit.
Yeah. Yes, I remember that well too. I remember playing with him the next day, and he said, oh, I shouldn't have had that last drink. And we'd lost the first set, and we were down about 5-1 in the second set, and then John said, okay, we got him right where we want him. And I just cracked up. We both cracked up. And we end up winning.
Yeah. But he told me how his first service game, he was renowned for his ball toss and his serve, but this one got away from him a bit, and he thought, oh, no, I can hit it, and he's gone way and fallen flat on his face. Yvonne's obviously got her back to him, and nothing's come past her, so she's looked around and said, what happened, John, when he's sort of lying flat on his face?
These are the sorts of stories that these old great Australian athletes of the 1970s died out on, of course.
Anyhow, Yvonne said, what happened, John, as he's pulling himself up off the grass? And he said, probably better you don't know, Yvonne.
But in better times for Nuke, I think you two probably danced the Wimbledon balls together in 1971.
Yeah, that's when I first achieved my dream, really, of playing on that magical centre court at Wimbledon.
Now, how old were you? Did you turn 20?
I was 19.
19,
I was 19. And I remember, the final. I was playing really well during the whole tournament, and I thought, oh, I'm going to play my hero again. She, Margaret Court, she usually beats me up most of the time. But I was playing really, really well. At some stage, I was thinking, she's not playing that well. And I found out later she was pregnant. No. So thank you, Barry.
She's been playing okay, though, to get to the final. So I reckon you won on merit. You did. You took her apart, didn't you? Straight sets, I think, in that final. And then you won it again in 1981.
Yeah, nine years later, 1980, after having Kelly.
Of course, so well remembered for the men's final, but you beat Chris Evert, didn't you?
Chris Evert, yeah. That was a big thrill for me, particularly after having, you know, my daughter Kelly. And, you know, I won the Australian Open before that after having Kelly. But winning Wimbledon, it was funny. After I'd won, I remember one of the officials coming up to me and saying, and did you know, you're not saying congratulations or anything, he just said, and did you know you're the first mother since Dorothy Lambert Chambers in 1914? And I thought, oh, okay. Anyway, so he never said anything else. But yeah, that was a really big thrill for me to do it the second time after so long.
And to dance with Bjorn Borg that year.
Yes, in fact, that year, Roger, my husband, was a very good tennis player, and he was like my sparring partner also. So Bjorn Borg and Leonard Berglund, his coach, we rented out another club to go and train there for a couple of hours a day before Wimbledon actually started. And then in 1980, just before the final, I felt like I was playing really well. I felt really good. I just needed to warm up my arms. So I asked Roger, I said, go find me a wall. So I actually went to the Queen's Club and hit against the wall, mm-hmm. and then went out and played. And so I became that little girl again.
Did you have a little mark on that wall that you aimed at as
yeah,
well?
I sure did.
Now, Carl tells me that you're not a bad golfer either, although you don't play all that often.
No. Well, it was actually in Atlanta. Cherokee course or something, and Roger had to find a celebrity to play with, so he asked me, and I'd only played once before, and so I played, and I made a hole in one, and not a bad score either. And so when we finished, I said to Roger, I said, you know, have you made a hole in one before? He said, never. And I said, well, until you make a hole in one, I'll play with you again. So obviously we haven't played since. and what I did after that was I only wanted to go there because I love to fish. And I got the rod out of the golf buggy, got it out, and wanted to go fishing. No, just you weren't allowed to, but I had a good time.
Your brother Ian was a pretty decent golfer, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think the whole family were. Mm-hmm. My dad, you know, used to play golf, mm-hmm. and he was a pretty good golfer. And my young brother played professional for a little while. Mm. So yeah, most of us, you know, even the biggest, one of my sisters who was quite big. She had great hands. We all seem to have great hands, and that's why I love watching cricket, really, because you know there's so many different skills in cricket too, timing, balance, hand-eye coordination, and reading the speed. And that's why I think Ash will do really well at this game.
Indigenous Australian athletes, though, excel at Aussie rules football. It's become their game, and a game which is a real stage for them. Do you enjoy watching Aussie rules?
I've watched a little bit lately because mainly my daughter Kelly actually married an ex-AFL player who played for a while as is it rookie? Not rookie. What's that? Anyway.
The name of the team or?
No, the position.
The rookies, they're sort of the...
Not the rookie. The
bottom
not
end
the rookie,
of the
not
list.
The
Rover, perhaps.
No. Anyway.
Ruckman,
that's right. The one.
A big boy.
Yeah, that's the one. Uh-huh. And he's a very big boy, very tall. Anyway.
Who did he play for?
He played for Geelong and... I can't remember the other team. I'm sorry if I'm a little bit vague right now because my son just got married last night and I'm half asleep.
You've been out acting like
I've had several coffees already.
No, you're going fine, Yvonne. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you.
I wonder if cricket can ever draw Indigenous sports people to it, because it hasn't... Ian Chappell, I know, has taken a great interest in the fact that the first ever Australian touring team to England was an Aboriginal team.
Yes, and I remember that.
And yet there's not great representation across the ranks of cricket, and it's certainly not been indicative at the highest level. So I wonder if the game can somehow help develop a culture among Indigenous Australians that they aspire to the heights of cricket.
I think because, you know, there's so many Aboriginal AFL players, because it's a very easy thing to play. I mean, all you have to have is a ball.
Mm.
Really, they'll play with anything. Yeah. Whereas, you know, like with tennis and cricket, I guess, you know, it's expensive. The equipment, you have to get the equipment, you can pay for the lessons and so on. And that's why we're trying to help out with our program, is we have free coaching lessons and for a lot of kids around Australia, and give them incentives to stay in school and also go to the Australian Open and create better lives for them, really. And it's through trying to help them. Like I said, I wouldn't be here unless I had the initial support of the townspeople of Burrellan, because they, you know, we couldn't afford it. I come from a very big family of eight, four boys, four girls, and Dad was always out working. Mum was looking after all of us. So it was the townspeople that saw me hitting against the wall every day that supported me and paid for pretty well everything, because we couldn't afford it. So, you know, down to the point, Mum even made my dresses out of sheets. And actually, they were the nice, most comfortable dresses too. but yeah, unless I, you know, if I didn't have that support, then I wouldn't be here today. And that's what I'm trying to do for a lot of kids all around Australia.
I think you should broaden that football aspect a little bit, because some very, very good union and league players amongst every. I mean, the Ella boys.
Mark
just,
and
just
Glenn.
For some. Oh, yeah. Mark was a hell of a player.
Yeah,
I mean, they were all
fantastic.
Good, but Mark was outstanding. But league, I mean, there's an enormous number of league players, Aboriginal players.
Mm.
They start the season with the Indigenous All-Stars. But that's all very good. That's very positive. There's a lot of role models now at the highest level in those schools.
If we get more role models out there, you know. When I came on the scene, you know, as a tennis player, there weren't... I was really the only Aboriginal really playing tournaments. Mm. And now we have tons more. Mm. And hopefully through our program, I'm very, very proud of it, actually.
One or two we should be looking out for?
There's some young girls that are coming up. Actually, we're sending to Pimble Ladies College, and they're doing really well. But they have to finish their education first before, you know, they can, you know, start on the tour or anything. I was held back travelling overseas in 1970 because I finished my high school certificate at Willoughby Girls High, and then I did a secretarial course, shorthand typing. In those days, they used to say, you know, something to fall back on in case you break your leg, you know, so learn another trade. But anyway, so I travelled that next year, never really looked back, and never used that shorthand typing again.
Was it Vic that rang his wife and said, you better come over, I think something really good's going to happen at Wimbledon when you won the first one?
Yeah, that's right. So he knew, but I didn't know at the time, because, you know, I had the experience of Margaret beating me most of the time, beating up on my brain. So it was a very, very special time, because that was when I achieved my dream of going to that magical centre court and winning, you know.
You were 19. I mean,
yeah, there's, 19.
There's not a long string of hard tennis behind you. You just suddenly, it all happened, didn't it?
Yeah, well, I won the French. The first Grand Slam that I won was actually in Paris during the French. I always loved to slide, and clay was beautiful to play on, even slower.
Would have been like being back in Burrellan, wouldn't it, playing on the red dirt?
The ant bed. courts, no, they're faster.
Are they faster?
They're much faster.
What a contrast in other ways, though, for a 19-year-old, one of eight Indigenous kids from Burrellan in New South Wales, a dot on the map, to be doing that. What did it feel like? Was it something you were able to enjoy in a totally uninhibited way, or did you find it challenging, bearing in mind the huge step it was from the life you'd known?
I think I just, you know, because even before seeing a tennis court, I loved hitting against the wall. I love that, you know, sort of feeling of getting better a little bit each day, hitting against the house walls, the water tanks, which made it exciting because the ball went all over the place and made it more interesting. And but it was something that I really enjoyed doing. Mm-hmm. And even during my whole career, I've had people say, well, why didn't you get upset because you lost? I don't know. I was just glad to be there. I was just happy to make it there, you know. And, yeah, so I tried to instill in a lot of the kids, you know, during my Indigenous, you know, sports program and so on, that to have fun. Mm. Have fun with your sports, because that's the one thing that will make you last in your career. Is have fun with it, and that's something that I've always done. And my parents, I mean, they didn't know anything about tennis, but through everything, whether I was in a tennis court or not, was to have fun and laugh and, you know, and enjoy what you're doing. And and, you know, I can forever thank them, really.
And it sounds as though Roger is your favourite player in the world of tennis, but do you enjoy watching Serena and the powerhouses of women's tennis?
Yeah, oh, she's an amazing player. She's very strong and so on. But yeah, you're right. I think that's the one thing that puts me off a bit. It's too noisy.
It is noisy.
I don't think it's necessary. Anyway.
Yvonne, we were told we had about 15 minutes with you. I think we've had 25.
It's sorry.
Terrific to have. No, it's been absolutely our pleasure. Thank you for coming in. It's great to see you here at the cricket.
Here.
Looking vibrant and as though you're enjoying life and so motivated doing what you're doing.
Thanks for coming in. Thank you. No, glad to be here. Thank you.
Yvonne Goolagong-Tawley, and is that a celebrated presence? Joe Burns has just about put a ball into our box.
I know.